We'd like to thank our friends at PwC for their support, partnership, and collaboration in making Retail Gets Real. Learn more about how PwC helps retailers at pwc.com.
Athletic performance and movement and sweating is important, but it's not the only thing. In fact, I would argue it's not even 30%. Movement is a big part. Nutrition is a big part. Your mental health is a big part. And we wanted to be able to contribute and tell those stories so that our customer understood who we were, that we support you in your whole approach to health and wellness.
Welcome to Retail Gets Real, where we hear from retail's most fascinating leaders about the industry that impacts everyone, everywhere, every day. I'm Bill Thorne, and on this episode of Retail Gets Real, we're talking to the CEO and co-founder of men's activewear brand, Roan. We'll hear from Nate about how the company is expanding its physical presence and growing its brand while holding on to its values. Nate Checkets, welcome to Retail Gets Real.
Thanks, Bill. I'm excited for this.
Well, how are you?
I'm good. I'm good. We're in Connecticut, and November is one of my favorite months. Went for a good long run this morning in like 30 degree weather. It's nice and crisp. And I'm very, very happy.
Nate, so I'm going to start by you telling us a little bit about Roan, and I want to hear a little bit about you. Tell us about the company.
Yeah. So our company is about, we say it's 7 years old. We kind of officially give our birthday as fall of 2014. But really we started a couple of years before that. Soft launches, prototyping, you know, kind of building up the product. It's in many ways been the last decade of my life. But we are a premium men's performance lifestyle brand. And what that means is that we make incredible product that is all rooted in performance that spans activewear, outerwear, underwear, and what we call commuter wear, which is you can wear it to work. We basically feel like we can handle an entire closet for the way men now live, work, and sweat. The focus has been using kind of best-in-class materials, developing our products in what we call a responsible way, and delivering kind of a best-in-class content experience to our community and our consumer through world-class content, bringing in world-class performers and interviewing them about how they structure their day, how they handle their nutrition, their training, their fashion, their closet. You know, we've had some really good success over the last few years. We've been great partners on the wholesale side, Peloton and Equinox's largest men's partner, 7 retail stores as of this month, and our biggest channel, which is our website, roan.com, kind of where we engage with our community and we share a lot of things that we're thinking about, studying, and focused on. So it's been a complete passion project. I love what we do and I love building great products. So it's been a lot of fun.
How did you get there? I mean, you said it's been your last decade. What were you doing before Roan kind of came to be?
Well, you know, I'll give you kind of the short story. We can go into, you know, longer parts of it if you want. But I was always an entrepreneur as a kid. I didn't know that's the word that you would use. But from the time I was a kid, I was like always hawking something. I was selling lemonade, or I'd climb up my grandma's cherry tree and sell those on the street. My grandparents had a house that was on a golf course in Utah. I used to dive in the lakes and collect the golf balls and sell them back to golfers. So I was always doing something like that. I started my first real company in college. I started a summer camp in my parents' backyard when I was 15 years old. The camp ran for 8 years. It's how I bought my first car. It's how I
most
saved
people
up
mow yards and but started a camp. That's amazing. Yeah.
I mean, as a 16-year-old, we were making like 40 grand a summer, teaching kids swim lessons, you know, developing this camp, and we had 50 kids a week. It was great. And then in college, I had an idea for a mobile technology startup. So we developed some patents. That business ended up, and the assets sold to the 49ers. And then that led me in this kind of sports consulting, technology consulting role where I consulted with some really cool companies like Cisco Sports and Entertainment and the Miami Dolphins and Steve Ross at Related, who also owns Equinox. And then I ended up joining the NFL to run the sponsorship strategy there and particularly focused a lot of my time on the technology efforts around Sideline and, you know, growing that business about 10x in a year and a half. And so it was a great experience I had. I learned a lot. But one of the things that I realized at the NFL is I'm just not a corporate guy. Like the idea of having to navigate red tape to get something done was really tough for me. And the NFL has this reputation that, you know, that it stands for the No Fun League because it's made up of a bunch of lawyers. It's not quite fair. There's some really good people at the league office and really, really smart people. But it just was not the place for somebody who, you know, kind of historically had been an entrepreneur and starting companies and just racing to fail fast and make decisions quickly. One of the hard things for me is that, so I live in Connecticut. I'd have to commute to Manhattan every day. And I remember telling my wife, the day I come home and I tell you today was a good day because I had a good commute, that's when I know I need to leave this job. Because I look around and people have just been doing this, you know, an hour and a half door to door each way for like 40 years. Well, anyways, I started kind of thinking about what could be next. And we saw, three big kind of trends happening in the space. One was there was a huge shift towards direct to consumer. Almost every business in any level of retail was seeing a shift to direct to consumer, a direct relationship with customer. And so we felt like there was a big opportunity there. The second big shift was a continued focus on health and wellness, which was being driven by what we call the quantified self. So one of my projects at the league was working to put chips and trackers on players to measure impact, speed, agility, shape of formation. And, you know, this is 2011. And so people are starting to wear things like Jawbones and Fitbits and Apple Watches. And so as people were getting more information about their recovery, their performance, their sleep, they would change their uniform to match being in a more active and more focused on kind of individual self-care, health and wellness. And the third kind of big trend that we were seeing was a premiumization, which was being driven by a younger consumer who wanted more experience and less stuff. So what they bought, what they invested in was, you know, was kind of this shift away from disposable fashion into kind of longevity and good materials that would last. And so as we started spending time on it, we felt like there was a big vacancy in the space. You know, in activewear, it's being driven by two big groups that we saw. On the men's side, it was highly wholesale distributed companies that we all know and have seen for a long time. 80%+ distributed via wholesale. And on the women's side, you know, brands like Lulu and others, which were more direct to consumer, were using premium prices, premium fabrications, but 85%+ of their revenue was being derived by women's. So on the men's space, when we try to find that equivalent, direct distribution, high focus on the male customer, premium fabrics, we couldn't find anyone. We would find very niche brands that would focus on triathlons or swimming or cycling, but nothing that was focused on kind of general performance. And again, we thought that this performance-driven fabric would come in every part of our lives, whether you're going to work, whether you're hanging out with friends, whether you're in the gym or you're training for a marathon or what have you. And so that's how the company was born. And it's definitely been a passion project.
You know, it's interesting because you're not all about athletic wear. I mean, you've got a lot of different products. How did you move from more of the athletic to, you know, the polos, the pullovers, things of that sort, the commuter wear?
Well, and you're looking good, by the way, in our grammar app, pullover.
I just want to make it clear, I am a Roan customer. I have been for some time. I don't think you make these products for me, but I love them because
we do make for you.
I have way too many of them. So yeah. Somebody actually made a comment the other day and he said, that's a Roan. You're wearing a Roan. I was like, how did you know? He said, I see the bars. And I was like, oh, yeah, I keep forgetting. And I see people in them. I mean, it's like a little club. You're like, oh, you got a Roan.
Yeah. Well, that's, I mean, there's so many different things that we could talk about there. But to answer your question of how did we shift from kind of like, because we started pure activewear, like hardcore training. And one of the questions that we asked ourselves is, what is the equivalent of a men's legging, right? Because we were seeing that women's leggings are really what was driving the kind of growth in the, you know, what's called athleisure category. And by the way, we really kind of detest the term athleisure because it's clothing that's made to look athletic, but that you don't necessarily work out in. And we we take the bend that we want to make clothes that are great enough to work out in, but you don't have to work out in them, which is slightly different. But so to get answer your question is, as we thought about what is the equivalent of a women's legging on the men's side, we thought, well, it's really what we developed and called the commuter pant. We figured, look, if you make a really great training short, how many of those do you really need in your closet? Maybe four or five, but a great pant that you can wear anywhere, everywhere, to work, to games, to, you know, to hang out with friends, you probably put 7 to 10 of those in your closet. So there's a high repeat rate on it if we can get it really right. We made it. We sold out of all of the inventory in the first like 8 days.
Wow.
And we were shocked. We had bought enough for what we thought was 10 weeks of inventory. And so then we've just been, you know, kind of chasing that business. And obviously the pandemic changed the mix a little bit for us.
Sure.
We started seeing more active and more lounge, but yeah, we believe that all lifestyle wear should be rooted in performance. So even that fabric that you're wearing on the Gramercy, it's a highly, highly wickable fabric. It's super comfortable. It's got stretch built into it. So you can, you know, you can move your arms and, you know, if you had to go do a training session in it, it would hold up. So that's, you know, that's kind of the philosophy, is how we think about it, is, you know, everything's got to be rooted in performance.
I can wear it to work. You know, and I get compliments on it all the time. Yeah. Like, that looks really comfortable. And that's the big part of it. It is incredibly comfortable.
Yeah. I think when we came in, what was interesting to me is I remember we sat down with a bunch of designers. And I remember one designer said, well, the one thing that we know about men's fashion and men's clothing is they don't care as much about comfort, and they're much more driven by function. And I was like, that, I don't know what men you're interacting with, but I would say that every guy I know, the very first thing they want is they want it to be comfortable. Like, mm-hmm. That's one, two, and three. And obviously fit and function are, you know, important. Why do you have to sacrifice? Like, you shouldn't have to sacrifice fit or function or comfort. You should be able to kind of have all three of those. And so, you know, that's part of everything we make. If it's not comfortable, we're not making it.
The beach hoodies. I own three, I believe. I think I've got red, blue, black.
I love those.
And the shorts, oh my God, I wear those shorts all the time. The so incredibly comfortable. And when you come out with a new color, you'll note I'm usually one of the first on the site to see if that was.
I'm going to have to start bringing you on every podcast. So you just...
Well, the one thing I want to get to this move that you all are making to brick and mortar. But, you know, to me, one of the neat things about Roan and the success that you have, I think, is driven a lot by the fact that you've created a community. You go onto the website, you can get tips, you can read interviews. I mean, there's just so much going on there. So you're not just going to buy something, you're going to learn something.
Yeah.
And I think that conceptually, was that when you started out, was that the idea? We're going to create a community and we're going to sell stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. When I was kind of going through this decision phase of what do I want to do in my life? I had this hour and a half long train ride every day. And I remember writing in my journal, I want to build a brand that matters. And in my mind, when we started talking about the opportunity here, it was like, the world doesn't need another activewear company. But what I thought really... You know, I had two boys at the time. I now have three boys. I grew up with three brothers. I thought about just this moment of time in which every active brand speaking to men is saying, jump higher, run faster, lift more weights. You're an athlete. Everybody is an athlete. And athletic performance was something that was always important to me. You know, I tried to stay fit. I tried to participate in athletics. All of my siblings did. But I realized as I got older, you know, I want to be a really great father. I want to be a good husband. I want to contribute to my community in a positive way. And I want to take care of myself, you know, mentally. And that's a huge part of what we focus on as a brand, is we wanted to take kind of the alternative approach of let's focus on you as a whole person. And athletic performance and movement and sweating is important, but it's not the only thing. In fact, I would argue it's not even 30%. Movement is a big part. Nutrition is a big part. Your mental health is a big part. And we wanted to be able to contribute and tell those stories. so that our customer understood who we were, that we support you in your whole approach to health and wellness. I'll never forget when we were getting started, we named all of our products indirectly after inspirational kind of male icons, and we would put quotes by them in the product. But you know, the quotes are in the hemlines and the waistband so that when you flip it up, you can kind of see it. And I remember talking to someone and he said, "Why are your quotes upside down? If I flip it up, like it's facing me, it's not facing out." I'm like, "Because it's not meant for anyone else. It's meant for you." And he paused and he got kind of emotional and he said, "You know, you just reminded me, my father just passed away this last year and my son got a tattoo of his signature on his leg. So every morning when he wakes up, he sees his grandfather's name and it reminds him of the man he's aspiring to be." And that is exactly what we try and do. We want to be much more than clothing to people because the world doesn't need another clothing company. But people fall in love with brands because of what it means to them in their life. And it starts to resonate with, who am I trying to be? And when I put on this uniform, I'm connecting, you know, with that identity of trying to be better. You know, people don't set out to be bad or negative influences. That happens incrementally. And on the margin, if we can make a small impact by providing great product and small reminders, then, you know, hopefully on a broader scale, we can have a positive impact.
So how do you, so we're moving into brick and mortar. So I'll start with the easy question, which is the why. And then the harder question, how do you replicate what you're doing online in store? Or do you?
Yeah. Well, I think, so the why of brick and mortar for us is pretty simple. It works. I mean, we believe in it. And it's funny because if you talk to people who've been in the space for a while, they're like, "Yeah, duh, we know it works." But the funny thing about DT or what I would call digitally native founded businesses is we think we're so smart. We're like, we invented the internet and we're so clever and, you know, can't believe prior generations didn't see this. But the truth is we are beneficiaries of our time. And that's all it is. We're in this unique time where the transaction has changed to where the majority of transactions are going to take place. It's going to shift to be majority online. The pandemic's only accelerated that. But still, a substantial amount of purchases happen in person. The majority still happen in person, even post-pandemic. And so we'd be crazy to completely ignore that audience. And particularly for us, we start with fabrics with our products. So we use amazing fabrics. And the hard thing that we have in an online environment is we have all of these little micro competitors who are saying, "Look at this zipper, or look at this function." And to the consumer, they don't know that our product is substantially better, more worn test. Like, we've done durability testing, we've done sweat testing, we've done odor testing. We do, you know, we are crazy about our quality. And in store, you can tell. When you touch the fabric, you're like, "Oh, okay, now I get it." But online, it's hard to fully communicate that. And so that leads to the second question, which is, you know, how do we replicate that in an online environment? We kind of try and take the approach of what can we do in store that we can't do online? And how do we make it better than an online environment so that you're actually converting customers in a way that deepens their loyalty to the brand? And when they're on the go or they're not near a store or they're on vacation, they need something fast, the online store is always available to them. And we see that our in-store customers are more valuable to us on an LTV basis than our online only customers. So yeah, I mean, I think that's where, you know, we believe in kind of the brick and mortar model. It's hard to be good at it. It's a different business. And I think that's where I was confused when we first got started. I'm like, why is this so much harder or different? But it's actually easier, I think, to operate 10 stores than it is to operate one or two stores.
So when are you coming to DC?
not soon enough. I love that.
Oh, come on. It's not that hard. There's a lot of good retail space.
Yeah.
You got to come to DC.
We've looked at it. It's a great market for us online. So you're probably driving up the geo a bit, but yeah, I want to get into that market. I love that. That's one of my favorite cities.
Well, next time you're here, stop by.
I would love to.
But there's got to be a lot of learnings that you've had as you've moved into the brick and mortar, as you're opening these stores, as you're expanding. What are some of the ones that just come right to mind, the learnings of moving from online the in-store?
I think the first is that it's really, really hard. And you underestimate how hard it is because it's a totally different business. And at first, when we were opening one or two stores, I was like, oh my gosh, we have to spend so much time on the real estate strategy, the build out, getting the story right in store. And for like this much money relative to like, we run one great email campaign and we're making way more money than we are in store. And it seems like such a joke that we would be spending this amount of time on this physical footprint. And that's why, like, to me, the key learning is it's actually easier to operate more stores than it is to operate less stores. Like, because you can spread corporate overhead over more stores, you can get more thought process to it, and you can duplicate what you find successful in the stores versus like, you know, a 1-2 store, you can't really get great at it. It's really hard to do.
Right.
And so that's like, that's been my biggest takeaway. And I wish I would have realized that sooner, because for like 3 years, we had 1-2 stores and we just didn't do it right. We didn't do it well. Customer could tell the systems weren't fully integrated, you know? So I'm really excited about where the future is for us that way.
Well, you know, speaking as an entrepreneur, and you look at retail, one of the greatest industries in the world, what is the future? What is the future of retail in Nate's mind?
Yeah, I think it's going to change, no question. I think you are going to continue to see the shift into more of a showroom model, but I don't think it's going to go away. You hear brands say, we'll never open a retail store. And I say to them, you're going to miss a substantial part of the consumer base. Yep. When I was talking with Neil Blumenthal at Warby Parker, he said to me, 85% of all optical eyewear is still purchased in person. Yep. He's like, we'd be crazy to miss that.
And he's got a store in DC, FYI.
Yeah, he's got 100 stores. So he's well ahead of me. But he was part of the inspiration for me as I sat back and thought about it. And so, you know, I think the landscape is definitely going to be experiential. I think you're going to see omni-channel brands. It's so interesting. I was just, you know, in Austin, Texas or DC. It's the same brands. It's these omni-channel brands that have really figured out how to get in both places.
Yep.
But I think futurists love to talk about how it's going to change so dramatically. I think people love to congregate in person. I think people love to shop in person. And I just don't see that changing. I don't want to live in a world where we're all hanging around the metaverse with, you know, VR lenses and like high-fiving each other's emojis. That just sounds awful to me. So I think physical retail is going to be around. I think it's going to thrive in a big way. It's going to cycle in and out based on demand. But I don't see it going away.
We spent so much time over a period of time several years ago just beating back this narrative of retail, brick and mortar, dead, dying, gone. It's all going to go online. And I love hearing what you have to say. We've heard it. Every retail leader that we talk to says it. And it's really, you don't read those headlines anymore. I think that the whole narrative about brick and mortar dying at the hands of online is pretty much old news. And it was never true to begin with.
Totally.
And I think the industry has proven that online and in-store are live and well. Nate, last question. What is the best advice you've ever been given that's helped you in your career?
I really think back to when I was just getting started and I felt so inadequate. And I still feel inadequate, 95% of the time. But somebody said to me, embrace your own ignorance because it can be as much of a tool as it is a weakness. And I realized that, you know, when you don't know the answer to a question, it keeps you really curious and inquisitive and asking questions. And it's something that I try not to lose, not to ever feel like we've got to the answer or we've arrived there. And it sounds trite, but you know, ignorance can be a great blessing. It sounds odd, but it's really true, because if you knew how hard something was, you'd never even get started in the first place.
Roan, where did the name come from?
The name comes from the Rhone Glacier, which is in Switzerland and kind of flows into the Rhone River. And what we like about that region is it's amazing. It's beautiful, but it's also functional. And Rhone was meant to kind of marry aesthetic and function into a single brand. And the domain was available and the social handles were available. So we like that too.
It's a very good reason. Yeah. Nate, I can't thank you enough for joining us today because this has been incredibly interesting for me. I love your product. I love your brand. I love your story. And I really love the idea that we're going to keep in touch with you, get you into DC. I can't wait to come to the grand opening in all of my Rhone glory.
Well, we can't wait to have our local model there.
So. I'll have lots to choose from. All right, and thank you all for listening to another episode of Retail Gets Real. You can find more information about this episode at retailgetsreal.com, and we'd love to hear from you. So please send your feedback and comments to podcast@nrf.com. I'm Bill Thorne, and as we say during this time of pandemic, please stay safe, be well. Thanks for listening, and until next time.